Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Andrew Carnegie said, 90% of all millionaires become so through owning real estate. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest whose company has a focus with efficiency. Today's Playmaker is a CEO power broker and a Dallas Business Journal heavy hitter. With us today is a partner whose secret weapon is yoga. This great Playmaker is Sarah Hinckley Kennington. Sarah is partner of 34 Commercial. Now, Sarah has 17 years of experience in office brokerage in the DFW region. In late 2017, she launched 34 Commercial. 34 Commercial is a full-service brokerage platform dedicated to serving clients in a focused nature. The leasing team at 34 Commercial specializes in creating value in the assets they handle. Their brokers attract new tenants as well as execute renewals, relocations, pre-leasing, terminations, and subleases. The 34 Commercial management staff use their roles as an extension of their tenants' business. Their management professionals bolster the leasing team to accelerate leasing, retain tenants, and maximize value. Prior to founding 34 Commercial, Sarah was a principal at Peloton Commercial Real Estate and associate at Transwestern. Well, Sarah, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're a Midwesterner. So my first question is, how does a Midwesterner from Ohio end up in North Texas?
It's a crazy story, and it dates back to basically when I was younger, trying to figure out my life. I was always very strong-willed, as my parents would call it, and Ohio doesn't have the types of industry that I would say DFW has. My versions of success were always doctors, lawyers, dentists, professional services. So my dad was an endodontist, and I decided very young that I was going to be a doctor, and I had no other choice in my life. So I applied early for Miami University, went in pre-med, and for the first time in my life, failed at something. There's a course called BMZ, which was biology, microbiology, and zoology. And I got my first bad grade. And I remember sitting in class saying, what are they talking about? I can't even understand these words. So that, coupled with the fact that I had to dissect a cat and cried, I decided that being a doctor wasn't the highest and best use of my time. Or my skill set, but I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I applied for the business school, but because I didn't get great grades my first semester of freshman year, I was waitlisted. So I started working for our sports department. And if you recall, I went to school with Wally Szczerbiak. He was a senior when I was a freshman. He went on to the NBA. And then Ben Roethlisberger, who everyone knows is the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the MAC at the time, Miami had the best teams, and I started working for our teams and doing sports marketing. So I ended up changing my focus to sports management with a minor in marketing. And I think it was my junior year, the Cincinnati Bengals, which was about 40 miles away from Oxford, Ohio, came on our campus and recruited me and five others to be summer interns. And we thought we had this great job working for the NFL, but we literally sat in a room like this with no windows, cold called all summer long for individual ticket sales. It was a beating. And the Cincinnati Bengals were terrible at this time. So from there, I said, I'm not doing this next summer. I ended up graduating in 4.5 years. And so the next summer, I went to the Cape Cod Baseball League. And if you're not familiar with the league, people or players that get drafted out of college play summer ball. And the difference is that they play with a wood bat like they do in the big leagues, and then they play with aluminum bats in college. So the Cape Cod League is like the premier summer ball. I mean, everyone that gets drafted out of college usually plays there. So I did their marketing for their East League. They have 10 teams, so I covered 5 and handled marketing, wrote press releases, just kind of anything they wanted to do. But that summer, I nannied for a family all day because the games were at night, for a family that lives here in DFW, and they own a jewelry wholesaling company. And at the end of the summer, they said, will you come back and be our nanny next summer? And I mean, I had the time of my life that summer, and I said, no, I can't. I got to go, you know, start my life, get a job. And they said, well, why don't you come to Dallas? I'd never even stepped foot in Texas. Work for our company, help us out, and then you can come one more summer and then, you know, go start your life. And I was only 22 at the time, so, you know, starting my career at 23 didn't seem like a big step back. So I ended up moving here sight unseen. Actually lived in South Lake and kind of discovered Dallas and Fort Worth, but I liked Dallas better. Moved back to the Cape League, and at the end of that summer, I was applying for sports-related jobs. And if you know anything about the sports league, it's ultra-competitive and very low pay, unless you're, you know, the daughter of Jerry Jones or someone like that. And I decided, you know, I didn't want to work in sports. I wanted to go make money and still did not know what I was going to do. But I moved to Dallas without a job in September of 2003. So that was after I graduated in 2002, had that extra summer in the Cape Cod League, and then came here, signed a lease with no job.
I was going to bring this up a little later, but since you brought it up, just recently you've gotten back into sports, and I mentioned this at the beginning. Yoga, that's your secret real estate weapon.
Yes.
You are certified.
Yes.
And you teach it.
Yes.
Why yoga, and how did you get into it?
I've been religious about yoga for, you'll all learn, I'll tell you about 34, but since I was 34, so 6 years ago, but I've been practicing since I was probably 30. I tried it in my 20s, but I was really impatient and unflexible. And then yoga is just one thing that everyone can do, but you can also advance with age. And it doesn't matter, you know, it helps in all other sports. So my golf game got better and just I was more fit in other things. So as challenging as it was mentally and physically, I found that the more I went, the better I felt, the calmer I was, the better decisions I made. So it's kind of like this. Yoga is almost like a spiritual journey. So I got really, really focused on it and was going 5 times a week. And then a yoga teacher said, you know, you should really think about getting certified. And this all kind of fell in line when I was starting 34. But I took a 200-hour teacher certification, and it was really life-changing. I wish I could just take everything I've learned and give it to everybody else. But it's kind of everyone's own journey, so they have to find it themselves. But
well, from what you said, it sounds like you are very much a driver in terms of personality.
Yes. Probably to a fault.
Especially when you mentioned to your parents that you were very focused on what you wanted to do. I understand this also helps you relax. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. I just found no matter what state I went in, happy, sad, anxious, you know, whatever, nervous, you'd come out just, So I used to have a nighttime practice, but now the only time I can work out is from 6 to 7 a.m. Not right now with this COVID crisis, but so I usually go in the morning, and it's just a wonderful way to start the day.
Well, let's go back to you and your business.
Yeah.
Because you did get into real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You've worked for a couple of companies and started your own, which is called 34 Commercial. But the first question I have to ask you is, why the name 34?
Yes. Well, that also parallels with my track in life, and I can tell you how I got into real estate later. Growing up, I was always a really big sports fan. So the sports fandom didn't start later in life. I was obsessed with the NBA as a young girl, which is, you know, a little strange that I think I was 9 or 10 and staying up to watch Jordan three-peat by myself. But that was the kind of girl I was. So Charles Barkley was my favorite NBA player, and his number was 34. And 34 was always my lucky number. So, you know, since social media and emails came out, everything was always Sarah Hinckley 34, something, something 34. Every password has 34. So as I approached 34, at 33, I had gone on a mission trip to Africa, and it was really, really eye-opening. I didn't grow up going to church. I would say my family would identify as Christian, but we weren't, you know, super going to church and very dedicated to that. I kind of shopped churches in the area, and I decided that I loved Highland Park Methodist. I really liked the pastor, Paul Rasmussen. So I met with him, had all sorts of questions for him, and he boiled down Christianity into the most simple form that I could understand for someone that didn't grow up doing it. So I decided I wanted to join that church. And I was, you know, 33 at the time, and he said, well, have you ever been baptized? And I had not. My siblings have, but I grew up, my parents had me very young, And my dad relocated us to Japan because he was in the Navy to pay for dental school. They said that they would relocate, and they said, the Navy said, great, we're going to move you to Japan. So my brother was actually born there, so I lived there from 6 months to about three. So I just, the baptism just never happened. So I decided to publicly get baptized. And I did that 2 weeks after my 34th birthday. My family was in town. It was a really special moment. But I would say that was pretty eye-opening. Right after that, I read The Purpose-Driven Life. And if you haven't read it, it's a fantastic book. And I think I thought, as a Christian, that I was supposed to be, you know, volunteering in a soup kitchen, just, you know, giving my way to Christ, which what you would think from a Hallmark card. But what it actually means is to use your God-given strengths to just better the world and be kind to others and, you know, a servant's heart, just like Jesus. So that, along with baptism and reading that book, I kind of discovered that all my quote-unquote negative qualities of being, like I said, strong-willed or very aggressive or really ambitious, which aren't typically identified with a female characteristic, I decided this is how God made me, and this is a good thing. Right about that time, baptism, reading the book, my former employer, Peloton, which has now sold to JLL, which is, I think, the second largest institutional real estate brokerage firm in the world, they were trying to open up the Houston office. So my boss said, well, you should go. And it kind of lit this fire under me to go and create, to be a female leader. And what I love to do is chase business. I had such a struggle getting into real estate. I do love providing opportunity for other people. I explored that. This was right before Houston kind of hit a rough patch with oil and gas. But instead of that didn't work out. They were going to merge with another company there. That didn't work out. So I was kind of on this holding pattern of what should I do with my life. So they'd come back to me and said, what do you want to do? Do you want to stay here, grow our company, or do you want to move to Houston? And, you know, months had passed, and I decided Dallas was my home, and so I said I was going to stay here. And I was having a drink with someone right before I made this decision who is in capital markets, and I was telling him the conundrum. I don't, you know, because I'd built, you know, my market reputation and my market knowledge on DFW, not on Houston. I said, I don't know what I should do. And he was just listening, and I said, you know what? I should just stay here and open up my own company. And he said, that's exactly what you should go do. So 34 basically is a very big number in my life, but it basically represents God's plan. So it took me 3 years to work up the courage to leave a very comfortable position to go start this, but it was a big leap of faith, and I didn't know what was waiting on the other side, but it was even better than I could have imagined. But I just remember thinking, if God took me this far, he's going to be there. Because, you know, I came a long way from moving to Dallas with $4,000 in my account and not knowing anybody. So if I can go this far, I'll keep going.
Well, you're lucky your favorite number is not 99. You understand that you give 3.4%
yes.
of your transaction fees to charitable organizations,
yes.
which
yes.
is an interesting way to tie in your 34 to
yes.
that.
Yes.
Are there any specific charitable organizations that you focus on?
Yeah, so I'm on the board of St. Philip's Community School in Southwest Dallas. And then I'm heavily involved in the Real Estate Council, which is a nonprofit, but it's also associated with the real estate. That Genesis, and then Genesis Women's Shelter, and then Big Brothers Big Sisters. But the Real Estate Council is tied into their Catalyst Project, which is focused on that Southwest Dallas, which is St. Philip's cornerstone. So there's a really big revolution going down there. But that's kind of what I've focused on in the past couple of years.
We've been talking all around your actual business. Tell us what you do mm-hmm. and why 34 Commercial is the commercial real estate company for tenants, for buyers of buildings, anybody that needs commercial real estate.
Yeah. Dallas is a big market. It's 360 million square feet of office space. So most people specialize. So you have people that do just debt, just equity, just leasing on the landlord side, just tenant rep. I am known for leasing buildings, and so is what our firm is, what's the new business we're seeking. But I've personally had a lot of history in representing tenants. I've had some large land sales and building sales. So I would be a little bit more like more of a street broker, which is usually what you see in smaller ancillary markets. But I've had the good fortune of seeing a lot of different sides of the business. So my original intent, and you see this every couple cycles, is to have a boutique firm that's really focused on excellent service and marketing. So we have focused just on Class A assets. We've got about 2 million square feet of listings. There's been a couple sales and several tenant rep deals in there. But I just think as we get into this digital age and things are changing, it's especially right now with how rapidly everything's changing, you can't replace human contact and surface and market knowledge. So I made the decision that, along with the 3.4%, is that I would rather do more with less than you know, spread myself really thin, you know, have 14 different clients. So that's kind of what we're trying to stay true to, is that excellent service and marketing in the Class A, which is kind of the higher end, high rise office space that I've had the most experience with.
Well, what are some of the notable transactions you have? Some of the larger buildings that people mm-hmm. might be familiar with?
So my first leasing assignment ever, I actually never was called to the leasing side. I started out representing tenants, but I was kind of pulled onto this side, was Bank of America Plaza. I leased that for almost a decade. It's the largest building in town. It's lit up green at night. It's just under 2 million square feet. So I cut my teeth on that. And with that size of tenant, it's just a very sophisticated process in the transaction process. So from there, I worked on the Union, which I don't know if you know that, in Uptown. I have a large portfolio out in Las Colinas on the corner of 114 and 161. We did Gartner's relocation, Epsilon's deal for 250,000 square feet. I've done a lot, but those are some of the notable ones. Last year, we sold a 6-acre tract of land downtown, which is the largest contiguous site left, on Woodall, south of Field. That'll be a large development in the future. I also sold the site for The Link, which is really the only spec uptown development under construction right now. That'll deliver in 2021. So a lot in downtown and uptown, Present Center, Las Colinas, some in Legacy, but we're trying to kind of spread out and cover different submarkets. But most of my knowledge has been in downtown and uptown, and it's been wild to see how much that's grown.
I would think also with the type of business that you're doing that you become an expert because you're spending so much time with the client, with the building, mm-hmm. that you know it backwards and forwards for the potential lessees. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's not unlike residential real estate, where if you just focused on one neighborhood and you know, hey, that house sold for this or this. If you focus on a submarket, what I always tell young people coming in trying to learn, because this industry is hard. There's no guidebook. There's no school. It's trial by fire. The biggest lessons are from your mistakes. I mean, trust me, the things that I've learned has been how I've messed up. But young people are coming in and they're learning how to sell, how to communicate, all the lingo. There's 6 different ways to say one thing, the submarket, the owner. So it's just so much of a learning experience. But if you take a step back, and I didn't get into the industry until I was 25, so I had a couple years of sales experience. So I learned how to sell elsewhere. But then I only focused on downtown for the first couple years of my career. So I learned, once you learn something backwards and forward, it's easy to go recreate that. And then you understand a different submarket. So my advice to young people is always learn, you know, be an expert in something, and then it'll be easier to be more of a master of a larger market once you've conquered one smaller item.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. You became a real estate professional a little later. Mm-hmm. It was never something you wanted to do initially. What would you say to somebody that would like to get into commercial real estate and or become a professional that is actually an owner?
There's so many facets of real estate. So I'll speak to the brokerage side, which is what I know. And that is a kind of the you trial by fire, like I said. Everything's commission only. You kind of make your way. The key really is to having a great mentor. Unfortunately, I didn't have great mentorship until later in my career. I was kind of figuring it out on my own, again, through lots of mistakes. So finding someone that you respect and you want to model your work ethic and career after is so key, because this is such a large market. Going in and trying to figure it out by yourself and trying to get leads is very challenging. So for brokerage, I would say, you know, being a self-starter is hugely important because there's no guidebook. There's no say, okay, by 8 o'clock you get your coffee, 9 o'clock you have this meeting. You're creating your own destiny. That was what's so attractive to me, is that you reap what you sow, you manifest. Some people like the stability of a paycheck and, you know, hey, I know I have this amount of vacation days. I always wanted to create my own, you know, kingdom. So that's how I got into it. There are safer ways into real estate that you're just as involved, whether it's, you know, asset management. I mean, architect's not a safe way. It's a very challenging way. You got to go through a lot of schooling, but it's a little bit more stable. But, you know, and like if we timestamp this, you know, we're, what is it, May 12th, 2020. So we are 60 days into this COVID crisis. It's going to be a rough year for brokerage. But this is why we work so hard. We have big ups, big downs. And then the longer you're in it, you get to understand the middle ground and try not to ride the highs or the lows, and just understand that the sun will shine again, it'll rain again, but right now it's a little dry.
Well, you're still rather early in your career as far as ownership brokerage firm. Where do you see yourself? Where do you see your business 5 years down the road? What will be different?
Yeah, I think the people that I've talked to that have started companies, they probably couldn't live their life without trying. And that's the biggest thing, is like, I've just got to see if I can do this. I think when I left my former firm, my ego would tell me that I wanted to just be the biggest, the this, the that. And once I got on to the ownership side and how quickly things change from just caring how much, you know, Sarah Hinckley makes versus I'm concerned with, you know, providing for my staff, great culture, you know, is everyone feeling comfortable? I'm so focused on culture. You know, I want to grow. I want to have a team. I want to, you know, be a really respectable boutique firm. But I also want to keep that culture and quality of life. My life has changed considerably. I met my husband 2 weeks, like basically 2 weeks after I started the firm. Another really prominent tenant rep actually set us up. I now have stepchildren, which we have most of the time. I'm pregnant. You know, we both own companies. We started a third company together. So while I love working and I'm an addict, there's a life balance that I want to create for not only myself, but for the people that I work with.
So you are experiencing things a little later.
Yes, a lot later.
And they're all coming together at the same time.
Correct.
You must be a very organized person.
Yes, and I outsource as much as I can. That's one thing that I think I struggled with early in my career, was just holding on to everything because I felt like if I did it, it was right. But now you got to trust. I mean, you got to trust the team around you, whether it's at home or at work. And, you know, if something's not perfect, just letting it go. And, you know, I'm not a brain surgeon, and we can get things back on the right track.
Well, delegation is one of the top leadership skills anyway. Mm-hmm. Should someone want to get a hold of you and your business, what should they do? Where should they go?
That's the thing about brokerage, is you're kind of 24/7. It's one thing I am learning is boundaries with my time, because if a client calls me at 10 o'clock and I'm about to get in bed, I'll answer. I am trying to be a little bit more judicious about, okay, this is when I'm on, this is when I'm off, because my family jokes that if they took a picture of us on vacation, they'd all be playing on the beach and I would be on the corner on the phone. So I'm pretty accessible. But as this business has grown and as I've spread into, you know, charitable work and volunteer, I'm trying to be a lot more studious about my time and having boundaries with that. But
so tell everybody about your website.
Oh, 34. I think the hardest part about starting a business is, what do you call it? Because it's, you know, I could have easily called it Hinckley Commercial and just, you know, made it all about my career. But what I really wanted to make it about was just, when you surrender to God's plan or whatever the universe provides for you, things kind of open the door. So we're actually... I love the design of our website. Lauren with Colbert Design, she did it for me. She was a marketing contractor, but now I have in-house marketing, and I think it's beautiful. But what we're trying to express is the story that I put into words about kind of when you surrender to the unknown and take that first step without seeing the whole staircase, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, the plan plays out. So we're trying to get that into text, and we actually probably will link this interview so people understand more, but that is something that we're working on.
And the website is on the PlaymakerTalkShow.com website, and it's 30 spelled out dash 4 spelled out playmakerstalkshow.com. Well, this has been a terrific show. Sarah, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciated it.
Sarah Hinckley Kennington, she is partner with 34 Commercial. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.